This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Jazzy sounds of Power Talk, the Tuesday edition of it, on this important day in our history, said as it is, as we remember Sharpeville Massacre, as we remember the massacre in Langa on the 21st of March. So, under the new dispensation, this day is now named Human Rights Day. And we're going to have a very interesting conversation about the Constitution. And it's a reflect 25 years of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa and a decision by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to have a reflection on the Constitution. We started this conversation some time back, if you recall, with Senior Counsel Thembeka Ncube-Tobi about the Constitution, its relevance, and some of the frustrations that we hear from South Africans, okay, in terms of the Constitution. And we followed it up with the DDG of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Dr. Mashabane, and we also had Advocate Thiriso Tipanyane in terms of, you know, what's going to be transpiring. But we're going to look at what's going to be happening for the coming 3 days at this important event. And I will be joined by Crispin Peary, who is the spokesperson for the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, and will also be joined by former Deputy Public Protector, Advocate Kevin Malunga, on this topic. Crispin Peary speaks on behalf of the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, Minister Lamola. Crispin, good morning to you. Welcome to Power.
Good morning, Mario, and good morning to our Power FM listeners.
Let's also welcome Advocate Kevin Malunga, former Deputy Public Protector. Good morning to you, sir. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. Yes. Good morning to you and your listeners.
Crispin, let's just start with this basic question. 3 days have been put aside to discuss and also to have a reflection on the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. Why is this necessary and important?
Well, we think that there must be generally robust debate among South Africans, you know, as to whether the Constitution as we see it today has achieved what it was intended for, and we must have an open discussion around that. But also, we also know that there are misconceptions around the Constitution and particularly around its formation. So, for instance, you often hear people saying things like, this Constitution is a sellout document and is a product exclusively of the CODESA arrangement. So, in a platform like this, where we are openly dissecting and discussing our Constitution, we'll also be able to outline the historical outline of our Constitution. For instance, we'll be able to explain that this Constitution comes as far back as 1923, when the ANC adopted the African Charter of Human Rights, as far back as 1955, when the ANC adopted the Freedom Charter. All of those principles are still expressed in this Constitution, and then ultimately even before that, 1991, when the ANC Constitutional Committee formulated its expression of what it would like to see in the Bill of Rights. So we will be able to outline those type of conversations, but also we'll have to have very frank conversations around progress on land reform and whether the Constitution has been an impediment. I think that's a debate that we must now put to rest. Also, what we are seeing now is the rise of debate around electoral reforms and how the Constitution in its current expression can give expression to that. We're also seeing interesting debates around the role of the judiciary. Some people have gone as far as saying sometimes you have a judicial overreach, sometimes you don't, or, you know, who is the ultimate guardian of the Constitution. So we think a platform like this over the next 3 days will really help us ventilate these conversations and then help us look forward to say, how do we, what do we envision should be in the Constitution as we mark the 30-year anniversary of the Constitution, which is in a short space of time, and what should we amend in the Constitution? Sometimes you also hear people saying, Mario, that, you know, part of the mistakes that we may have made is that when we drafted this Constitution, we had a presidential being like Mandela in mind, President Mandela in mind. And over the years, we have learned that not everyone is in the mold of President Mandela. That's some of the sentiments that people express publicly. So I'm sure also Mr. Malunga, being the former deputy public protector, he would also want to express some views around whether we have properly insulated Chapter 9 institutions, whether we have properly given them the ability to do the role that they were envisioned to do in a constitutional democracy. So there are a number of discussions that I envision to take place amongst various role players, might I add, in society. So academics, members of the legislatures, mayors, we have people from other political parties coming, students, business leaders, religious leaders, the legal fraternity, traditional leaders, and including yourselves, the media.
So, Crispin, one of the concerns that is raised on a number of platforms, it's about the Constitution, for instance, benefiting the elites. It's about the laws of this country benefiting the elites. It's about the difference between what we call political elites and the masses. So if you look at this three-day conference, that's going to reflect on the Constitution. And you've just mentioned the people that will be there, mayors, academics, and so on and so forth. The question still remains to say, where will be the voice of the people in these 3 days? Ordinary people that are phoning into this program and say, this Constitution doesn't work for us. They may call it the best constitution in the world, but it doesn't work for us. Where are those voices in the 3 days?
They will be there as well. A number of civil society organizations have been invited as well. And we know that in the main civil society organizations do represent everyone in society, but also most importantly, the working class of our societies by and large. So, for instance, these are even organizations that actually litigate to ensure that the Constitution finds expression in our everyday experience. So organizations like, for instance, KSAC, organizations like various civil society organizations. But to answer that question of people saying this Constitution benefits primarily the elite, I think what we actually see from the litigation that we have experienced around the Constitution is actually quite the opposite. So if you look at one of the biggest cases around socioeconomic rights, in fact, all of the cases around socioeconomic rights, from Fruit Boom to TAC, they're all about the man on the street. TAC was ensuring that everyone has the right to access antiretrovirals, and that's something that everybody benefits from today. And the argument was premised on what the Constitution provides. Fruit Boom was around the right to housing. Also there, the argument was premised on what the Constitution provides for. So I think we're going to have to dissect statements like that a lot more to see particularly which aspect of the Constitution benefits who. Because from the patterns that we are seeing of litigation, we do actually find that when there is litigation brought and the Constitution is being prosecuted directly to benefit people from working class communities and everyone in society in particular.
Yeah. Let's bring in Advocate Kevin Malunga. You at one stage in senior management of Chapter 9 institutions, in particular the public protector.
Yeah.
And the crafters of our constitution, they came up with Chapter 9 institutions as institutions that will safeguard and deepen our democracy. You've got Chapter 9 institutions like the South African Human Rights Commission, the CLR, the one responsible for, you know, protecting the culture and the languages and all that. But obviously, there were challenges during your era at the public protector, for instance. There was this issue as to whether remedial actions of the public protector are binding or not. It had to take an Nkandla judgment, and this might have been taken to the Concord to finally determine that the remedial actions of the public protector are binding. But just in broad terms, in terms of this Chapter 9 institutions that are existing in this country, there have been criticisms, strong criticisms. South African Human Rights Commission have been criticized. This CRL criticized, for instance, you know, to say you've got bogus priests that are doing things, and all we can say is that we've referred it to the, you know, we've referred the matter to the Council of Churches to deal with it. But you are a Chapter 9 institution. You're supposed to be doing something about it. So give us your perspective in terms of, do these Chapter 9 institutions really deepen our democracy, or the criticism that is leveled against them by the citizenry are justified in one way or the other?
Thanks, Mario, and good morning to you and the listeners once again. These institutions are South Africa's constitutional gift, as far as I'm concerned. They are definitely not perfect, as you have indicated, but they have taken the tag that a lot of post-liberation democracies have in Africa, that many countries have, that they become draconian, they become dictatorships, that government is not accountable. That tag certainly doesn't apply to South Africa because of these institutions. I think the extent of their effectiveness is premised on a number of issues. First, it's premised on the choice of people who are chosen to run the institutions. Does the legislature choose the right people to do that? The citizenry itself. Remember, the Constitution is infused with major tenets of participatory democracy, where the citizen must be consulted at all times in everything that is happening. So what I found usually is that the people who are persistent, who want, let's say, for example, who have lodged a complaint, who are persistent with it, who will not back down, tended to get the results. So I think very often people don't know the amount of power that they have against the state. I've always said on many platforms that people have sort of gotten to tolerate state mediocrity, when in actual fact they have rights to go after the state. And I think just to clarify the other capacity that I'm coming in here, Chris, I was a state law advisor in your department. So we were actually part of the group that formulated some of these responses, especially the Access to Justice Project around 2011, where we're trying to ensure that the citizenry has access to justice, even the poorest of the poor. That what you're referring to, Maria, as Richmond's justice and so forth. We're trying to eliminate that and trying to level the playing field. And certainly, the Chapter 9 institutions have done a lot to give and enforce rights to people who don't have money to litigate, people who don't have a lot of resources.
All right, it's gone 21 minutes after the hour 10. I'm in conversation with Crispin Piri, speaks for the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, and also former Deputy Public Protector, Advocate Kevin Malunga. We're looking at this important national conference that's going to have a reflection on the Constitution. According to Crispin, it's going to be a brutally honest discussion. So we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to move on this point of access to justice and some of the some of the institutions that have been put in place to enable access to justice, and whether they work or not, and whether is there something that can be done.
Inspiring change. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
All right, 23 minutes after the hour 10 o'clock. So Crispin Peary, let's look at this issue of access to justice. Some of the comments that you hear is that if you want, fine, provisions have been made in terms of the Constitution, where you have institutions like your legal resource center, you know, and other institutions where you can get the pro bono services and stuff. But what you hear is that if you want to lose a case, if you truly want to lose a case, go to these institutions that offer pro bono services. So it's like, it's a hang pal, that's it. So how do we ensure that we have competent and capable people and citizens who can afford your big law firms that are charging exorbitant funds, and they go to these institutions that have been made possible through our constitutions, but now they go there hesitantly, knowing that they're going to lose. Is there a fair criticism? What has been your experience? Because we are reflecting on what people are telling us to say, if you want to lose a case, go to this the institutions where they provide pro bono services.
Yeah, I think that is a very unfair criticism of Legal Aid South Africa. If you want to speak of one of the most effective and biggest law firms in South Africa, you speak of Legal Aid South Africa. And their record is actually quite prolific in a number of respects. Yes, like any other government institution, it will be inundated with a lot of people who require their services. And the legal aid lawyers have to deal with a very high caseload. One of the difficulties that we are always dealing with in the Department of Justice is how do we ensure that this institution is better funded so that it can reach more people, but also so that we can employ more people at that institution so that the work that it does is a lot more effective. And as someone who almost articled at Legal Aid, I think having been there, I've really seen the great work that these people do. If we speak of resisting illegal evictions, Legal Aid is now one of the institutions that deal with that. And also a number of criminal matters, high-profile criminal matters, Legal Aid has been there to ensure that justice is done for individuals. So I think it's a harsh criticism. But the criticism is actually also expressed in this way, is that one of the things that is incorrect about our justice system is that if you have a lot of money, you will likely stretch the justice system to its limits. And we see that with the number of people who are able to constantly appeal matters right up to the Constitutional Court. And that requires you to have deep pockets and have lawyers on brief for a very long time, whereas someone who is from a working class background will not be able to litigate that far unless really it's a really public interest issue, which are few and far between matters, or which are normally very special cases. So that's one of the anomalies that we are trying to correct. But it's also a function of the inequalities in our society. So the haves will always have an ability to stretch policies to its limits, and the have-nots will always have to comply with the bare limitations of the policy or the introductory principles of a particular policy. So that's a function of inequality in our society, and we hope that as we implement the Constitution and bridge the divide between the haves and the have-nots, that is a problem that would go away. But directly speaking to that, we've also promulgated in recent years the Legal Practice Act, which makes it compulsory for legal practitioners to give pro bono services to communities. And this is something that's going to be brought before Parliament, I think, in the coming weeks, actually. And this will go a long way also in ensuring that the best of the best that we have in our society, so the likes of Advocate Thembeka Ngqulayithobi, can one day sit in the community and consult with community members about various legal issues that they're experiencing and advise them accordingly. And in terms of this act, that would be a compulsory act that has to be done pro bono. So that also goes a long way to bridging the access to justice issue from a monetary point of view.
Okay. Advocate Malunga, it might sound like a philosophical question, okay? but it's something that keeps coming back, and I struggle as well sometimes when these questions are posed. You know, I'm not a legal person, but things that are posed in line with the Constitution, I struggle to can answer or give a view. I'll give a typical example to say, people are saying this Constitution, it's best. Take, for instance, the Bill of Rights. And I talk about children's rights. I spoke about how President Mandela donated the fifth of his salary, you know, throughout his presidency, you know, and also established the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund so that, you know, the children's rights can be protected in advance. They are there protected in the Constitution. And what frustrates the people, including myself, is that the Bill of Rights, children's rights are protected there and so on. But 30 years into democracy, you still have children falling into pit latrines. You still have the unleashed, you still have violence unleashed against children, raped, murdered, and so on. And I know it might be a frustration, but people say, you tell us about the best constitution, but look at the rights of the children, how they've been trampled upon. How do we address that in conferences like this?
Thanks, Mario. I think you're spot on, and I'm glad Crispin is listening as someone who's going to be at the forefront of the conference from tomorrow and it's Thursday. I think the major illness of the South African public sector is there's very little implementation of plans, or insufficient implementation of plans. So there's always a green paper of this, white paper of this, draft of this. Then there's, after that, this minister comes and that one goes. There are many things that, you know, we drafted at the Department of Justice. Thankfully, I think I'll give credit to Crispin. Some of the things that we drafted when I was a state law advisor, they are actually moving some of them. But I certainly do believe that they're moving far too slowly, you know, for comfort. So there's a lot of talk. You know, the guy, the police guy, the police minister and his friends, they talk a lot. But do they actually do anything? Criminals are running, you know, rampant in this country, terrorizing citizens. So there's too much talking and less doing. So I don't even want to be legalistic about this. It's a very fundamental, simple process that is probably explains a lot of the challenges that we that people face.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
can we pause it there? I'm just going to request you to pause it there. We will continue with that point after the 10:30 news headlines with Nkosi Khona Malingamnisi.
Getting you what you need to know. Power Talk. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
All right. 26 minutes before the hour, 11 o'clock. That's why I was struggling to frame that question. I said it might be philosophical, but Advocate Malunga is saying it's not even constitutional. It's just downright coming down to the ethical standards of the public sector or the bureaucrats in government. Okay, just complete your thoughts there, Mr. Malunga.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mario. I think maybe one thing, if we just go back to the foundation of your question, which was basically largely access to justice. You know, access to justice in terms of South African law is not a favor. You know, Section 9 of the Constitution says everyone is equal before the law and has the right to equal protection of the law, and you've got access to justice, equal access to you know, to the courts, and fair trial rights. You've got a constitution that has very explicit provisions relating to access to court, the right to a fair trial, and access to justice. It's all in Section 34 and 35 of the Constitution. So Section, you always want to check Section 9, 34 and 35. So what we're saying here is really, it's not a favor. So it's very nice that Mr. Piri is and his team are hosting this wonderful conference, and I applaud them for it. But they're not doing anybody a favor. It's actually in the law of the country that they must deliver on these mandates. It's in the Constitution, and it's on in various enabling legislation. That said, The point I'm making is that as someone who's, and I'm not just talking about this, I've actually done this. So I think, you know, very often people, when you raise these concerns, people say, but what do you know? No. I'm saying because I've done this, we have walked this talk on many, many occasions. And one of the major defects, not just in justice, even in health, the potholes that you see on the roads, load shedding, whatever, a lot of these governance failures, service delivery failures, are largely a failure of people to be held accountable for their promises that they make, sticking to the policy imperatives that they have. So every year you have a bunch of officials flying down to Parliament in an act of malicious compliance, where they present their strategy for the year, where they present their annual report, and even when nothing happens, after that. So it becomes a vicious cycle of malperformance, a vicious cycle of more of the same, and you've got many defects. For example, in public procurement, which is probably the biggest elephant in the room, you know, where people procure goods and services and give them to the wrong people, and so forth and so on. So it's a huge cycle and circle. Even the pro bono lawyers that you're talking about, for a while, that was the problem. You were not training them adequately, or not getting the correct ones. But I have the highest regard for people who do that kind of work. So I won't question their abilities, but I think they really definitely need more support. And certainly the community need to understand their rights in this regard in terms of access to these services and people.
Yeah. Okay. I think, Crispin, maybe some points have been taken, because there's going to be a lot of panel discussions and all those kind of things. And the sense I'm getting is that it shouldn't just be focused on the themes that have been prescribed, but also get the views of, I mean, the fact that public servants are not really doing their utmost. So that's not all of them. I'm going to pose this question because it comes from a tweet, Offense. He has just tweeted us now. And the question is, and the tweet says, Crispin, the so-called best constitution in the world, everyone is using it against us. Who's really benefiting? And here she tagged Justice for South Africa. That's a tweet. And that tweet says, South African Human Rights Organization, the Legal Resources Center, is attempting to amend South African laws to make it easier for children of illegal immigrants to obtain South African birth certificates. Their lawyer, Muyenga Mugera Sikawabe, says birth South African registration system is unconstitutional. And still on that point, Crispin, just recently, the case of those 22 Afghanistan nationals who came through to South Africa, they were in Zambia, Zimbabwe for some time, even went on to tell the Minister of Home Affairs in his face to say, no, we are using the loopholes within your constitution. Those people are from Afghanistan. They were helping the Americans and all those kind of things, but they can't go to America. They have to come to South Africa. And they are using this particular constitution. So that's the question that the offense is posing, to say, what are we saying with these things? People using our own constitution for their own benefit, not the benefit of citizens of this country.
Yeah, I think I think a short answer to that is that the constitution in its current form is going to be very generic in the type of society that we want to live in. So there would be nothing wrong with saying, for instance, everyone should be equal before the law. I think we can all agree on that. Or there would be nothing wrong with something that says equality includes full enjoyment of all rights and freedoms, right? But then these laws can be limited by what we call general laws of application, and that's where Section 36 applies. And in terms of Section 36, then most of the time, the legislature, which is our parliament, would have to then enact laws that give expression to these provisions, or sometimes that even, for lack of a better word, narrow these provisions for specific purposes in our society. So that is what we must really look at, is I think we should be able to say, does the Citizenship Act actually give proper expression to what the Constitution envisions? Does the Equality Act give proper expression to what we want to see as a society? So where the Constitution, for instance, is expressly clear, it says no citizen may be deprived of citizenship, then the question becomes, what is the definition of a citizen? But the Constitution is clear that no citizen may be deprived of citizenship. When the Constitution says everyone has a right to freedom of movement in the Republic, the question is, who is everyone? And that's what legislation then seeks to define. And so I think the criticism on the Constitution is overly broad. I think the criticism should be what happens in the legislative making processes. And then even there, our role as citizens as to what do we do when Parliament says, here is a bill that is up for discussion. Here is a bill for public comment. Do we comment as citizens? Do we play a role in ensuring that this legislation gives expression to our lived realities? Most of the time, we don't. What we actually do see is the very same civil society organizations and human rights organizations that we critique, their voices are often heard there, but normal citizens' voices are not heard. Yet these calls are made openly to the public for public participation. So I think the question of participatory democracy as well is something that really we should hone in on collectively as citizens to say, how do we deepen it? But how do we ensure that, as advocate Malunga's former colleague would say, how do we ensure that Gogo Dlamini, sitting somewhere in Mushu, is able to participate in the lawmaking processes of our country?
All right. When we return from a break, I'm just going to read something about activism in the judiciary. Crispin, and maybe you can just wrap it up for us, because it is also linked to these issues of people's frustrations with the Constitution. All right, we'll be back after this.
Murio Sanyane on Power 98.7.
All right, 16 before 11. Crispin, here's a question from independent historian Malisela on Twitter. He says, is a review of the role of judicial activism on the cards in this upcoming conference? And if so, will it propose that judicial activism lean more to a redress of historical injustices than judicial integrity? And we see, with that case of the Afghan nationals, callers on Power FM, they were saying, if we had a transformed and an activist judiciary for the sake of national security, they shouldn't have ruled against the Department of Home Affairs. So that's a question that historian is Malisela is asking. And I'm just linking it to what transpired with the case of the 22 Afghanistan nationals, and in terms of their reactions from the powerlessness.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we look at when we speak of transformation of the judiciary is sometimes even the judicial philosophy of a particular candidate who is before the Judicial Commission. And that is important because you want to understand what type of lawyer is this person. So we often get lawyers who would look at a text and understand it with a view of saying, how do we ensure that this text truly gives expression to the society we envision. Then we also have lawyers and judges who would look at the law and say, this is the law, and you have to interpret it exactly as it is. So if it says that the sky is blue, then that is it. The sky is blue, and the law must be strictly applied to the letter of the law. So those are ongoing matters that we always consider when one selects candidates, I think, for judicial appointment. And that's ultimately the bar that we want to see. So often you'll see that people get asked the question, like, what is your view in terms of Section 166 of our Constitution on how that should find expression in society? And that's generally the provision that speaks to the type of society that we want and the type of benches that we want to have. So this is in terms of race and gender. And you often then get to hear the expression of various people. So I think the type of judges that we have, and that also then leads to judicial activists, often speaks to the quality of judges that are selected by forums like the Judicial Services Commission. And I think that is definitely up for discussion as well, as to whether the Judicial Services Commission in its current form is functioning well. Are there any reforms that we would like to see happening there? That would be something that people are very well, that may very well raise. But we've also seen very, very interesting justices that have been to the Constitutional Court. One thinks of Justice Albie Sachs, for instance, who really, really found a way to constantly breathe a new form of constitutionalism at a time where the jurisprudence that we had was entirely common law and old apartheid law. And so the provision there in the Constitution is quite clear. We rely on Section 39 of the Constitution, which says that when you interpret the law, you should be able to interpret it through the lens of the Constitution and not just the law as it entirely is. So we do hope that, that in fact, judicial activism, in a sense, let me say, is found in Section 39 of our Constitution. I think it's Section 39.2, if I'm not mistaken, that constantly gives expression to interpreting the laws of the day in a particular way which advances the Constitution, but not disimprovising society in any way.
Okay, let's go to the calls now. Jerry Litabile, good morning. Your question, please.
My question is, Muyo, you know, as I'm listening to your analyst today, your guest, they are actually analyzing this issue of the Constitution like a layman on the street. If you check the Constitution, page 1, which is the preamble, I want your guest there to go there and actually try to correct the politicians, because they are saying they like to quote one sentence from this preamble of saying the country belongs to all who live in it. It's wrong, Muyo. The Constitution must be read as is. The second question is that, according to Public Protector, the accessibility of the public protector, we have seen recently the case of Palapala Farm, where politicians can take the public protector and investigate what is happening in Palapala. I think this is to waste the public's money. I mean, who is to approach the public protector to investigate and to assist? Like the case of yesterday, we have seen illegal march, or was legalized this march, but many people lost the money, they lost their salaries. Will the public protector help those people who lost their salaries because of there were legal march that prompted shops to close? Thanks, Leo.
Jerry, before you go, on the issue of the preamble, because I know in terms of the program, they're going to read it out. So, but you're saying there is a problem. What is the problem there? Because I want Crispin to answer that, and then Kevin will answer the issue of the public protector. Yeah? What's the problem?
The preamble starts by saying we the people of South Africa, and the last sentence is said Hosikatekile Africa. The media and the politicians, as well as the ministers, they like to quote one sentence in the preamble of saying the country belongs to all who live in it, of which is not the first sentence. The preamble must be read as a whole. And as a result, they are actually using the preamble to violate the laws of the Republic, bringing foreigners here, saying that South Africa belongs to all. It's wrong, Rio. It must start by the whole preamble of the Constitution, not one sentence.
Okay. I hear you, Jerry. Crispin, you want to comment on the issue of the preamble? Because in terms of the program, I see it's going to be read out or something like that.
Mario, I think also I want to take the compliment from Jerry when he says we are speaking like the layman on the street. I think that's how it should be. The Constitution should not be this mystical thing that no one understands, or it should be very complicated. So
it's really a compliment. Don't worry.
I'm chuffed by that.
It's a compliment. Don't worry.
Yeah. But I also think that Jerry might not have a copy of the Constitution, and I'm happy to send him one, because the one that I have doesn't say that South Africa belongs to all those who live in it only, right? So it starts with we, the people of South Africa, recognize the injustices of our past, honor those who have suffered for injustice and freedom in our land, respect those who have worked to build and develop our country, and believe that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, united in our diversity. Now, that is one sentence. All who live in it, united in our diversity. So it effectively means the son of the colonizer whose grave, his grandfather's grave is somewhere in St. Helena, is a South African. As equally is the son of the colonized, who has suffered great injustices, also is a South African, and this country belongs to both of us. That's one of the compromises that come from CODESA. That's one of the principles
okay.
that we have outlined in this country. So
we got to pause it there. Because of time, we got to pause it there. I've got callers that I need to take as well. Yeah. Mr. Malunga, the issue of the public protector, Jerry raising the issue that some people, obviously their shops closed and they couldn't obviously make money. Some people couldn't go to work, they're being affected and so on. And he says this thing of public protector investigating pala-pala and so on, it's a waste of taxpayers' money, even though we know that it might be confirmed to the issues of the ethics code in parliament and so on. But what Jerry's posing about, can the public protector, you know, assist people who have lost their income due to yesterday's march?
I remember that's an organization that is there for to redress state inaction. And of course, the inaction of yesterday was not just the state, it was both the private and public sector.
Mm.
So that would definitely not be a one-sided affair. I think the where the state would assist is really to ensure that the issues that gave rise to yesterday's shutdown, the concerns, the anger, the difficulties that keep on making the cycle of frustration to burst every few years, every few months, that those are addressed.
Okay.
So I think that's where an institution such as your Chapter 9s would come in. But I think the major victory would be an accountable state, a state that is where there are consequences, where you don't retain the same dead wood because they are your comrades. You have an effective, lean, manageable, efficient government.
Yeah.
And then, many of these problems will go away.
Okay, guys, I'm going to ask you, because of time, I'm going to request our callers to ask the question straight. You take the notes, and then we will wrap up with the feedback after that. Okay, callers, I'll appreciate if you can just straight to the point because we're out of time. Let's start with Becky in Rudeport. Becky, your question.
Good morning. I hope there will still be time to respond.
Yes.
I have a problem with small claims courts being run by lawyers. The problem is in that when you take a lawyer himself to small claims, especially in the same region, you are likely to have your case heard by his friend. And they will then dismiss the case without any recourse. I mean, the next recourse will be the magistrate's court, which will be more expensive than what the lawyer owes you. And also, lastly, Morea, the issue of a civil case expiring after 3 years, it looks like that is too short. That's my point.
You know, Beggy, on that one, I promise you, we'll have to do a special show on that one. I don't think Crispin will answer today, but we'll make sure that, I think it's an important point that you're raising, but we'll have to do a special one on this one. Letlhaonolo Pretoria, your question.
My brother, now for me, the Constitution does not speak to our current reality. One being that we still have got lots of our people that cannot access their land, especially their grave sites, because farm owners are refusing them access to that. Secondly, economic justice. Government is not helping with redressing the economic justice because they themselves told their farmers that they helped with trickling down effect in the very urban areas that conventional center. Why can't they hold their services and their functions in the townships and rural areas where their constituency is based that indeed suffered the economic injustices of the past? How do we address economic justice if they themselves are not leading the way?
Indeed. Tonolo, I posed that one to the DG some time back as to why is it in Kalaga State. But anyway, Prince Midrand, your question?
That's Maria. Good day to your guest. My question, or rather my comment, is to this effect. Today you're speaking to the Constitution and part of it and the law and whatnot. However, what I find is not out there and being discussed and being implemented is the very same Constitution that people get to then have to challenge is not being taught at school level, at primary level, at high school level. It's not being debated such that as citizens, this thing is inculcated in you so that you know what it is that, one, I mean, we speak of rights. Yes, there's rights, and equally there is responsibilities and what those responsibilities entail. I mean, for example, let's take the issue of your right to life. It's you are equally required to then make sure that everybody else has got their same equal right, their right to life. It is your responsibility. However, these things are not being discussed.
Okay.
Such that, I mean, you find teachers telling children at school that, no, you've got your parents do not have a right to hit you.
Yeah. Okay, Prince, I think we're going
to... Equally, they do not allow these children to understand that they have a responsibility to then also listen to...
I think let's pause it there. It's quite clear that we're going to have to unpack this thing even going forward. Let me take my last call. Mighty, very briefly, Northleaf.
Hi,
Yes, Mighty?
Your call has been placed on hold.
Oh.
Please wait.
Oh, Mighty. Well, it didn't work out there with Mighty. Apologies about that. All right,
your
we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we wrap it up with my guest, Crispin Peary, as well as Advocate Kevin Malung.
9 a.m. to noon. This is Power Talk on Power 98.7.
Well, you see, we can't discuss the Constitution in 45 minutes. It's practically impossible. So that's why we need to have a series of Constitution masterclass so that we can have a deep understanding. As we wrap up, Crispin, tell us what's going to be happening from tomorrow. Just the highlights of the conference, and I think we'll wrap it up there. Yep.
Yeah, no, thanks. But maybe just to quickly respond to one or two questions. I think the question of the Constitution does not speak to our reality because we're not able to go to our father's grave. Again, the Constitution does not expressly say you cannot go to your father's grave or something like that. In fact, you have the right to do so, and where you are prohibited, there are general laws that we can exercise. So I think what I'm taking away from this conversation, as well as the idea that the Constitution is not being taught in schools, I think what I'm taking away from this conversation is that we do need forums like this a lot more, where we're able to unpack to society what this Constitution entails, but also what we are doing to implement this Constitution. For instance, the idea that the Constitution is not being taught in schools is also fallacious, because one of the competitions that the Department of Justice runs in conjunction with the Department of Basic Education is a moot court competition. And every year we do send a delegation to Europe to go and debate constitutional aspects. And they also win a national competition here in South Africa based on constitutional motions. So there is a lot of work that is being done, but for us to truly implement this Constitution, I think what needs to happen is what Mr. Malunga says, that we do need ethical officials dedicated to the cause implementing our policies.
Okay.
And for tomorrow, we will also then put this to the fore, the Minister of Justice, and we hope that the President will be there as well to open the conference, and the Minister of Justice will then also deliver an address along with the President, and then we'll get the conference underway.
All right. We're out of time. Let me thank you both for your great insights. Let it be the beginning of a masterclass on the Constitution. Appreciate it. The Advocate Kevin Malunga, as well as Crispin Peary, spokesperson for Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, Ronald Lamola. All right. Up next is the news at 11 o'clock with Nkosi Khona Malingamnisi.
Power News.
Top stories this hour. Survivors of the Sharpeville massacre call on government to change the name of Human Rights Day. And Action SA slams yesterday's shutdown by the EFF, calling it unnecessary. Good morning, I'm Nkosi Khona Malingamnisi. The survivors of the Sharpeville massacre have called on government to change the name of Human Rights Day. Calls have continued to grow for the state to change the name to one that signifies the true events of the massacre. Today in 1960, apartheid police gunned down 69 people who were protesting against past laws. Thousands of residents of Sharpeville had descended to the police station without their identity documents and handed themselves in for arrest in a nationwide anti-past protest. The massacre intensified the apartheid revolution. However, victims and survivors are still calling for justice. Silwane Petwane, who survived the massacre, has denounced the current name given to this day.
This Sharpeville shooting day. Hey, good gentleman, go on, it's a man, I'm going to go along with Nike. Who bunny the bit of the other one? You don't understand that you know, like a Jacob. You'll go home to the government.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.